Attention, listeners. Do you ever find yourself struggling to decide what to watch on a Saturday night when you're in the mood for horror? Or perhaps you're trying to round out your own horror film education. In either case, I'm sure you'll be able to make some great discoveries in my 10x10 horror watch list, featuring a breakdown of the 10 favorite horror movies from 10 renowned horror directors. We did a deep dive of the favorite horror movies from directors including Guillermo del Toro, Ari Aster, Jordan Peele, Quentin Tarantino, James Gunn, Rob Zombie, Martin Scorsese, and many, many more. Here you'll find a collection of each director's favorite horror movies, along with quotes about what they appreciated about the films, all in an easy-to-reference PDF that you can download absolutely free. Featuring a mix of well-worn classics and deep cuts, hopefully you'll discover some overlooked gems and look at old classics through new lenses. Download the 10x10 horror watch list for free by visiting nicktaylor.com/horrorguide. That's nicktaylor.com/horrorguide. Welcome to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. As always, each episode of the Nick Taylor Horror Show explores how today's horror filmmakers are getting their movies made, while deconstructing their methods and career strategies into practical insights that you can use on your own horror filmmaking journey. Today's guest is Charlie Saroff, a cinematographer who has quickly established himself as a powerhouse in the horror genre. Charlie's breakout work on Natalie Erica James's Relic garnered widespread acclaim for its haunting atmosphere and masterful visual storytelling. This success led to his collaboration with Parker Finn on Smile and his upcoming work on the Smile sequel, as well as Night Swim from Blumhouse. In today's episode, Charlie and I dive deep into the craft of horror cinematography and strategies for creating tension and fear through visuals. We also get into his keys for successful collaborations between directors and DPs, and Charlie shares valuable advice for filmmakers looking to enhance their overall visual storytelling skills. All of this and so much more on today's very special episode of the Nick Taylor Horror Show. Without further ado, please welcome Charlie Saroff. Charlie Saroff, good to see you. How's it going?
Yeah, good too. Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
That's my pleasure. My pleasure. Been a big fan of your work since I think the first work of yours I saw was Relic, which is what, three years ago now? 4 years?
Sure, yeah. We shot it in, I think it was 2018. It was getting ready through 2019. I think that's when we found out it was going to go to Sundance. So then it came out in 2020. We all know what happened in 2020. So we were very lucky to be able to go to Sundance. That was like the last festival that played, and everyone was getting sick there. And there was like,
oh, man,
I remember like I was there with Natalie and she was flying back to Australia and she was like, I think I need to figure out what's going on here and get a mask or whatever. And I was always like, ah, oh, what is this? It's just another little thing. It'll blow over.
Right.
Same with South by Southwest. It was meant to play at South by Southwest. And then, you know, but yeah, that was, so yeah. So we shot it 2018, but then it was released early 2020. Sundance, and then
nice.
Played at some drive-ins, though. That was exciting. At least,
oh, that's cool. Yeah, I remember there were a few filmmakers who had movies go to drive-ins, like Psycho Gorman.
Yeah,
it was a drive-in movie.
Like a resurgence. We were all in our cars watching. It was cool. Like I went to more drive-in movies that year than I had in my life.
So yeah, I've never been to a drive-in movie in my life. I'm ashamed to say. Yeah. I'm in New York. There's not a lot of them around here.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta find them.
But you've got so many cool little theaters and stuff there, and it's all back up.
Oh yeah, more than makes up for it. We got a lot of cool theaters here. Yeah,
New York. I was just in New York shooting Smile 2. So,
oh, you guys shot in New York?
We did. Yeah. We shot upstate quite a lot because of, you know, there's that rebate up there. Newburgh's got the stages and a lot of areas there. A lot of interiors actually doubled for Manhattan, but we did about a week in Manhattan and, you know, exteriors and stuff like that and some drone
nice.
Work. And, yeah,
oh,
it was
nice.
Great. It was an awesome experience. Yeah.
Does any of it take place in New York?
It does, but that's battle. I'll probably say too much. You know, Parker will kill me. But yeah, it, it, does. Like, I think that's probably something I can say that it's, you know, because the first one was in New Jersey, so it was very close to that area. So this is, it's in that world still. So.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I'm super duper psyched about Smile 2. I feel like this is going to be a very significant franchise. And first one I thought was the scariest movie of the year. And I told Parker that when I was talking to him. And he talked at length about his collaboration with you. And I'm really curious because you've done a number of horror films now. What is your kind of relationship to the visual language of fear? What do you think about when you're crafting a shot and you want to elicit fear, tension, all the things that go with horror?
Yeah, I guess it's just trying to, it's just tricking the audience instead of trying to, it's all about pacing and timing. And then, you know, you're trying to point the audience in a certain direction. And then it's just that old trick of like just finding decoys and stuff like that. I'll give a lot of credit to the directors and the editors as well. Like, we definitely craft sequences and shots and scares and tension and all of that in the cinematography. Like, a lot of that is something that you know, plays a big part in it. You talk about it when you shot list, when you scout, when you're there. Like, it's definitely something that you want to be prepared to go in. But a lot of that comes out in the edit and the score as well. Like, that's so important. Like, it's, you know, everyone plays a big part in that. You know, my relationship with it is like, I sort of treat every film differently in a way, but they all have common thread. And it's not that much, like, I think shooting horror is actually very similar to shooting any other genre. You're always trying to like provoke emotion and, you know, make the audience feel something, whether that is tension or whether that's humor or you know, resentment or anger or fear. It's all the same sorts of tricks, I think. Yeah.
Huh. Got it. So as far as a decoy, is that a matter of just setting a shot up? So one thing is seemingly the focus while something else is just kind of coming off screen.
Yeah, it could be. It could be space. Like, it could be where your composition is, and there could be a dark corner or a room or something off to the side. Whereas, you know, you might short sight the actor and have them really, you know, to the edge of one side of frame, thinking that there's going to be something that's to the other. Mm-hmm. It's light plays a huge part in it. You know, I've said this a lot, but what the audience doesn't see is as important as what they do see.
Right.
You do a lot of that with lighting and a lot of that with just the, you know, again, like the editing plays a big part in that too. Just when you think something's going to happen, then, you know, and you know, performance, like, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to the actors as well.
Course,
like, it's a lot has to go right. It's just a big stew.
Yeah.
And we want to hope it comes out tasting all right.
Yeah, of course. So you've become like a go-to horror DP. Was that by design? Have you always been a big horror fan?
So I love horror, but I say this all the time. I love film. Like, I got into this like out of loving horror, different dramas, comedies, science fiction. Like, I love it all, and I hope to shoot it all. And I've done a couple of other, like, I did a neo-western that still hasn't come out yet. I've done a little coming-of-age comedy that I did after Relic. Very different. That said, I do love horror, and I'm more than happy to be considered or to be asked back to do more horror films now. Like, you know, if that's what I'm becoming known for in a lot of ways, I'm cool with that. I think it's a great genre. It's a popular genre. I love the fan base.
Yeah.
The people are so into it, you know, like, and I love that. Like, they're so excited, and they go to the theater, and that's like a dream come true. Especially in this climate where so many films are going to streaming and which is fine as well. Like, it's, you know, I'm not saying every film I do has to be a theatrical release, but it's a real bonus, and it's a privilege to have had films go to the cinema and then have people go and watch all around the world and stuff like that. I love that about the horror community.
Yeah.
They go to the cinema, they love it. It's a community and they're passionate about it. And if you don't get things right, they'll rip your shreds, but that's fine. And if you do get things right, they love it. But that's artwork and film and subjective. And, you know, I think that's great.
Yeah.
I guess just Relic got me, you know, I luckily met Parker after Relic. And then when, you know, after the success of that, then, you know, Nightswim came along, and then, you know, there's hopefully more to come with, you know, some directors I've worked with before, and then, you know, who knows what's around the corner, but I'm happy to you know, horror is fine.
Yeah. Did you do Laura Hasn't Slept?
No, I didn't. So I forget the gentleman of that. I should, I'm sorry if he's listening or if people know, I forget. It was Parker. It's somebody that Parker had worked with before.
Oh, okay. Got it.
I think it was about just having feature credits and stuff like that.
Right. Gotcha.
I don't really speak too much to that. I don't know the full situation, but he did a great job though. It's it obviously helps get Smile off the ground.
So, yeah, of course. Of course. So when you are preparing for a new movie, what's your sort of process like for arriving at the overall look of a film? Do you have any sort of a lookbook that you've collected and compiled over the years? Are there certain movies that you watch? How do you start to dial in to the actual look and feel of the movie itself visually?
So usually, I mean, obviously when you read the script, you can't help, I'm a visual person. So I think it's good to just try and read the script as you would anyone just trying to get the story done before you start thinking about visuals, but it's really hard for me. Like I'll instantly be thinking, oh, what sort of a world is this? And what sort of a world is that? And, I can't kind of help having an idea about certain things off even the first read. So it starts there, but a lot of that is also the director will often have a lookbook and ideas in mind for, like Parker, when we first sat down, he sort of mentioned some films that he, sorry, my phone should be on silent. No, he'd sort of talk about different references and directors that he liked and, Natalie the same, Bryce the same, like everyone sort of has an idea about sort of the world and tone. Then from there, I think, part of my job is to help with that and then go away. I find references, we watch films, like whether it's things that I can think of to present to the director, or often the director will have like, have you seen this film? I really like that about it and this and that about it. And, you kind of break down different elements of different pieces of artwork, photography, paintings, all that sort of stuff. And sometimes like I often find, and I think like, I don't want to like reference things too heavily. Like it happens. Like, I know in Smile there's lots of things where you could be like, oh, that's similar to that film. And, sometimes I feel like paying a homage to other films is cool as well. Like, but I do feel like sometimes you got to let it go a little bit after you establish a bit of a base and just go, whatever happens now, make it your own. Mm-hmm. Every film's going to be unique. You never know, the weather might change on you. You might have to pivot to a different location, or the production designer might put something together that's like fantastic, that's a little bit different to like where you think that the camera might, all these sorts of things can happen due to, something I've learned, over the past few films is that it doesn't matter how much planning goes into it. You might get 90% of it, but the 10% could be chaos. Like you don't know what's going to happen. So often a look will be shaped just out of those sorts of things too. And sometimes that's a great thing. So lookbooks, and then obviously shot listing, that's a huge thing. You get together with the director and you break things down. Mm-hmm. Where the film starts might be a little bit different to where it ends as far as the visual language of what lenses you use and, the distance from the actors and, is there more wide shots in the beginning? Do you tighten up towards the end? And, all these sorts of things can play a part of it. And it just happens in prep. Prep's so important. And then location scouting, going back to the locations often on my own or with the director after you've done a director scout, before you do the tech scout, when all the crew's there and you have to communicate things to the gaffer in the grip and all of that. Like I'd like to sometimes just go back to the space and spend time there just looking at it and thinking about things and problems that could arise.
Yeah.
Because there could be, I feel like cinematography is a bag of tricks. Hmm. You just have a big sack. People like Roger Deakins and Greg Fraser have a sack that can fill this, room, and, they're still learning and they're still finding out new things. Mine's a lot smaller, but like I find that the more you put in it, the more you've got to get out of trouble when something happens. Like you might get stuck in a corner and the blocking or the lighting's looking a certain way. And like, I remember when I first started, I'd just be like, oh, how do I get out of this? And sometimes you keep trying different things, and that's time, that's money, that's the crew getting, good crew won't get frustrated because they get it, but it's a thing. It's a melting pot of like, so I think more you can kind of, you learn along the way, you kind of keep that with you. And that's, that also helps shape the look of the film as well. Just being able to make decisions quickly and stuff. So,
Yeah. I know some directors prefer to storyboard, some don't. Do you have a preference?
Oh, hey, sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Oh, sorry, just cut it.
Oh, no worries.
Yeah.
Yeah, some directors prefer to storyboard, some don't. Is there, do you specifically have a preference?
I overall feel like I don't necessarily need to lean on storyboards or like them too much. Like, we use them a lot in commercials because the agency creative director, they have a very set thing in mind because they're using it, you know, as a corporation. Like, everything needs to be shot. Sometimes there's flexibility still, but as long as you shoot the boards,
right,
really important. And kind of can be a bit rigid. You kind of even subconsciously go, if the board's drawn up and the composition's a certain way, you kind of just sort of match it, not necessarily needing to. And I don't know, it can kind of streamline things and maybe make it a little less creative in some ways. I feel like with feature films, the best use of storyboards, and nearly all the directors I've worked with will use them in this way. For they're important sequences where there's VFX stunts, like a big, it could be a long shot that's very dynamic and it involves a lot of equipment and things like that. And it's not necessarily just for the director myself. It's for the stunt coordinator. It's for the VFX artist. It's for the gaffer, the grip, like everybody to sort of look at and go, oh, okay, I see what they're saying here. Cause this is, you know, it's, I personally don't need storyboards if it's a room, you know, even if it's a sequence where you are trying to create tension and it's there's a scare in there or something like that. I don't think you necessarily need them, but if you have a lot of, like, a large team that all needs to be on the same page,
yeah,
then that can be really.
So it's like a good blueprint. It's like a good blueprint, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, really good blueprint. And it can help with things like, you know, safety and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's like people know where, you know, things need to go and all of that. And fortunately, yeah, like, you know, people like Parker and Natalie Bryce, they like working with storyboards in the same way. Maybe if they had the luxury of storyboarding out the whole film in the future, they will, and that's fine, you know, like, and you hope to be a part of that as well, because, you know, just to sort of be there and help think about the sequences and ideas, and, you know, you only want to help with that stuff. So but honestly, yeah, I wouldn't personally, like, I'll do it, you know, because, like, I like to collaborate and they're friends and I'm there to help them. But, like, personally, I wouldn't want to, like, I don't really like the idea of having a whole film storyboarded. But I do enjoy having, like, a few sequences from a film that where you've got some big things going on. And, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, how much of arriving at a shot and crafting a shot is kind of like science versus intuition? How much of it is like, all right, I'm looking at the rule of thirds, or I have to center something, or you are on the day and the lighting is what it is, the actor is where they are, and it just comes together as you are looking at it? Like, how much of it is, I'm sure prep goes into it, but what is that balance like in arriving at a shot?
Really good question. And again, a lot of that depends on the director. Say Parker, for example, a lot of that will be in prep. He wants to make sure that we sort of have precision and things really well planned. That said, he also knows that film is film, and things happen on the day, and there might be a better opportunity for something a little better, or we have to pivot in a certain way. But ideally, like, you know, if we know that we're using a certain focal length for the lead actor, for example, at a certain distance, and we know that something's happening and it needs to be center punched and all of that sort of stuff, we want to have a pretty good plan going in, and that's what'll happen, and that's fine, because, you know, you work with him in prep doing that, and there's still a lot of creativity that goes into that, because you just, on the day, you kind of like have to work towards that, you know, give or take a little bit. But, you know, other directors are a little bit more flexible with that. You can find, and, you know, one isn't better than the other by any means, but, like, there are some that, you know, you're there and you're like, we talked about this, but, like, wow, like, look at that, you know, that's cool. And, you know, and there is this sort of a little bit more of a free-flowing, you know, you play jazz a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I like them both, honestly. Like, that's the thing I love about cinematography. I love, like, happy accidents, but I also like precision as well. Like, you know, this is the plan, must execute that way. And I think both can lead to good results. But so, yeah, to answer your question, a lot of it's in prep, but then, you know, again, happy accidents. You never know what. Sometimes the actor might do something or offer up something and they move a certain way and you're like, oh, that's cool. Or you find that you land at the location a little bit later than what you need to be, or because of the schedule and the sun's doing something a little bit different or than you thought that it would be in the tech, and you're kind of like, oh, we might want to move it to here then. And so, yeah, it's all just fluid, and you know, it all depends, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's kind of like, I think it's, it was Churchill or Roosevelt said that that plans are useless, but the act of planning is invaluable. Like having it all planned out is great just so you do the mental gymnastics in your head. But when you're on the day, like there's 100 different things that can present themselves, you know?
So true. And it is a bit like going to war as well. Like I'm sure the generals have these plans when they're trying to, when they know they're going to battle and then what happens sort of happens. It's a bit like that. Yeah. Not as serious as war, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
What's the process for coming up with the overall? I'm sure some of this is on the production design, but in terms of the overall look of the film, like lighting cues and stuff like that, what's the process at deciding, okay, these are the lenses, this is the lighting. Do you shoot a bunch of test footage with the director and take a look at it? And what's the overall process for really nailing down the look and the details?
Yeah. Definitely love to do testing, you know, with the luxury, like depending on the budget size and the time and what you've got allocated, you know, like it a lot depends on economics, unfortunately. That said, you know, camera rental houses and everything can be quite generous and they want to help out. So you can kind of, you know, maybe get some time in around, you know, when before things actually start.
Yeah.
But I love to test this and I'm not the most technical scientific DP. Like I kind of go more on look and intuition, or I like looking at previous things. Like I can go in and shoot charts all day and kind of go, I see that lens is a little softer on the edge, that does this, that does that. But at the end of the day, I'd prefer to watch a film that's shot on those lenses and go, okay, that's kind of the look and you get. And real world examples, or again, the bag of tricks that I talked about, you know, if I've used a certain lens in the past, I'm like, okay, that could be great for that. Or, you know, you've spoke to a friend or another DP or a director about what they've used and you're like, oh, I really liked how they look. So like a lot of that comes into testing. That's sort of my testing as well. But definitely, you know, selecting the camera and the lenses, like you do your research and you try things out, go into the camera rental houses and you do some tests. Usually you take in somebody to help sort of model a stand in for you and you play around with, you know, shine, you know, flares and bokeh and all that sort of stuff. But then as far as like, like a lot of the look is, you know, what we sort of talked about earlier, it's you create mood boards from artwork, photography, that type of stuff. And you talk about, you know, is it going to be a really contrasty film? Are we going to backlight a lot? You know, what is it, a colder film? Is it a warmer film? Does it get colder as we progress? And all these things, I guess it just all comes down into prep and planning again. And to your point, the production design has a massive part in that. And, you know, quite often they usually get brought on before because they do initial director scouts. So they even sometimes scout before the director even gets there. I'll be on, usually you get put on like a couple of weeks after and the production designer's already got like a bunch of locations for us to look at, like multiple options, and sort of put some ideas together. And so you go out with them and you work very closely with them and the director. It's a little bit of a, there's other parties as well, but I guess the three of you and wardrobe as well. Like, you know, I feel like on Smile 2 recently, which was the same core team as the first film, Lester Cohn was the production designer and Alexis Forte is the costume designer, and Parker and I, we would have a lot of like meetings with the four of us, and it was great, you know, because you need to make sure everything kind of melds in together. Like if I'm going to light something a certain way, you want to know what they're wearing, what color the walls are. You talk, you know, I'd work with Lester and Parker on color of curtains and walls and carpet and that type of thing. And then leading into the film, you would have some camera test days as well. We had a couple on the stage in Newburgh where Lester would literally wheel out like a wall with light lines of different colors of the paint and that would be used on the walls for certain locations. And, you know, I'd lens up and light it and we'd be like, that one's reading a bit sort of muted and darker and this one and that one. There's like, there's lots of different factors. And then the colorist as well. So I would, I would develop like a camera lookup table with the colorist. We have David Cole is a brilliant colorist. We're lucky to be working with him again on this one. And then on Night Swim, I had Alistair Arnold. He's brilliant as well. They're people at Photochem and they are amazing there. And you would basically after the test vision, you would go to Photochem. Night Swim was shot in LA, so I was able to go there physically. When I was in New York, we did a stream. I went to Goldcrest, I think they're called, as a host house there. And we would they would set up a remote session with Dave and they'd bring in all the test vision and he'd start playing around and just to sort of, you know, balance the look a bit. And then that would be something that I'd program into the camera. And then you run with that and that's what your dailies and everything would sort of show up, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. You know, but again, you have another, there's so many different stages. And I feel like DPing, like the more I'm doing it and the bigger the films get, I realize I have to be a manager of things and oversee things more. It's still creative. You're still in the trenches, but there's just all these different stages. When it was like smaller things and indie films, it would be, you know, camera on the shoulder and you're right. kind of doing all this stuff. But now, like, I, you know, I'd work with a brilliant DIT, who, you know, digital imaging technician, for those that don't know, they're people that will manage the dailies before it goes off to dailies color, before we all get to see them and Universal Studios or Paramount get to watch them. They do a balance and everything. So you shoot things and then they come in and I'll sit with the DIT and they'll be like, well, maybe we need to bring the highlights down here a little bit or the shadows there or make that, or, you know, I love using old lenses. Mm. So, because they, you know, they can be quite beautiful, softer tones, and you know, with modern digital technology, which we're often shooting on now, if you're not on film, I like to use old lenses quite a lot. And the problem is though, one lens, the 40mm might be have a green hue to it, the 75mm might have a warm hue to it. Mm. They're all, because it is old. So right. that's another thing that needs to be balanced out, which develops the look as well. It'll those. You know, you shoot things throughout the day and you swap lenses and then, you know, you go to DIT and it's like, why is it so warm? You know, Nate will be like, you know, he was the smile. DIT will be like, oh, that's because you're back on the 50mm and it's warm. And I'm like, okay, so he'll balance that out. And yeah, there's so much goes into the look. And then there's all the happy accidents. And
right. It's a lot of yes. checks and balances there.
There well, is, yeah. So that answers the question, but for yeah, there's sure. just so many different layers. Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So when working with a director, obviously directors have their ideas and notions for what the movie can be, should be, how the scenes would play out. The DP basically shows the director how the movie can get made. So it's a critical, critical collaboration. What are some
yeah,
of the...
Yeah, I think...
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I think so, for sure. Like you're definitely there to... bring their vision to life. And yeah. if they've got a really, some directors are more actor focused and they're like, just, you know, this is kind of what I want. You frame up, light it. I'll say something if I don't like it. You know, you can work with directors like that and you can work with directors that are very like, I love these sort of shots. This is how it's going to look. I want the camera to move from A to B. They're both fine because you can bring so much to both. Like with the, yeah. the first thing you bring a lot and sometimes like, you know, there's, in some ways it's nice to have, like, you know, if it's all just on your shoulders, you kind of like, oh, it can be a lot, you know? So it's nice to have a director that is also very, like, it has a visual plan as well. And then I think you can kind of help elevate it. And, but yeah, I think to answer your question, you want to just really be there to help bring it to life. And yeah. that's technical, it's creative, that's managerial, that's bringing on the right team to help get the job done. That's critical. You know, if you don't have a good key grip and gaffer that believes in it and has your back, you can really mess things up as well, slow things down, all that sort of stuff. So I think, yeah, your job is to just to really sort of, yeah, like bring it to life.
Yeah.
Help them bring it to life. Yeah.
Well, what are some of the hallmark keys of a successful collaboration between a DP and a director? What are some of the things that a director can do to really enable his partnership with his DP to be fruitful?
Yeah. Good question. Like trust, just some trust and to know that if you find the right DP, like I can't speak for everybody, but I feel like you want to find a DP that isn't trying to muscle their way in and prove anything to them about like and override them or doing any of those sorts of things that I think some directors, especially new directors, I think they can be a little bit worried about, especially if they're working with a DP that's experienced and been on a lot of films. Like our job is to be on set and shoot all the time. We prep, obviously, we color, but we, out of everybody, out of the main heads of department and well, I should say that because like production designers and wardrobe and all that are similar, but compared to the director, we are on set a lot more. We've had a lot more set experience. It's just how it is. Like, you know, right. Like I've worked with a lot of first time film directors now. And even before I'd shot films, I did so many music videos and short films and commercials and documentaries. And you're just used to that environment. You're used to being there and seeing how things operate. And I think sometimes if it's a director that hasn't been on set that much, they're a little bit sort of, it can be hard to let some things go and, you know, and I finding trust, like trust is a big thing. Get along with them. Make sure you have similar tastes in some ways, not on it. be everything, but just have that shared common kind of like, okay, like we love this about this film and we have like some same sensibilities. I can't get this right all the time, but I've been very fortunate just to be really good friends. I've become good friends with the directors I work with.
Nice. That's
amazing. It's important to me. Like I caught up with, you know, Parker and Bryce. We went to all to dinner together the other day and had a great time. And I love that. Like they're my friends and that's great. Cause then you can have a beer when you rap and bitch and moan about things that aren't happening and celebrate the things that do. And I think there's like, you spend so much time together, like you're like, yeah. Their set wife in a way. So you kind of, I like that. Not everyone's going to be your friend and you might just have a collaboration and work together and that's fine. But that is a nice way to work where you just become mates and, you know, so, but yeah, it's just planning and prepping and getting on, just trying to develop some trust together and just knowing that your job is to, yeah, like we can bring a lot to the table. And you know, you want to hope that you have, you know, input into how the film looks for sure.
Yeah.
And like when people watch it, they can kind of, oh, cool. You know, like the cinematography is great. It's great for a lot of different reasons. It's not just the cinematographer. It's like all these other departments that I was telling you about. But, you know, you want to have, you want to be able to bring something to the table there. But at the end of the day, like you're also brought on to support the director. And I think, you know, for DPs, that's like our main thing. Like, you know, you're not kind of, it's not your own show. Otherwise you direct, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think if you can be like, I think you're going to have a better relationship with the director. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. So we have a lot of filmmakers listening for either new filmmakers or first time directors. What do you see are, what are some of the like newbie errors and what are some of the things that like first time directors should think about when approaching their first film, when it comes to their relationship with their DP and when it comes to the overall look of the movie? Cause I feel like I see this a lot. Sometimes, I'm not going to name any movies, but we've all watched a movie or been in the first 5 minutes of a movie and like, this doesn't feel like a real movie because it's just not shot in a way that has cinematic integrity. And you're like, I can't watch this. It literally does not feel like a movie. So what are some of the, from a cinematography perspective, what are some of the things that people should always make sure when they're working on a budget? Where should people invest, I guess, is a better way to put this in terms of the look of the film to avoid that sort of kiss of death?
It's good question. I think like something that I've found, I've been fortunate for this to not happen on feature films, but I have done commercials and music videos like this where the director's not that experienced, but they're great. Like you might be good friends with them and you know, it's nothing personal, but they don't know how to communicate whether they like or don't like something.
Hmm.
And you can't really, sometimes you're just, they've got this sort of like, you know, they don't just say, no, I'd prefer it like this. Or, you know, I thought it was going to be a bit more blue or
right.
The lens is a little, you know, they kind of just freeze up a bit and they kind of, and a lot of that, it's a confidence thing. It's scary to be a director. Like it's scary being a DP. Like I'll still get nervous, like especially day one and working with a new crew. You feel like you're on the stage a little bit, you know, you have to talk to a lot of people and communicate with people and they're all like, you know, you shouldn't, I'm getting better at this, but like if you're working with an experienced whatever gaffer and that, there's a part of you that has this imposter syndrome of like, you know, do they think that I'm shit? Do they think I don't know what I'm doing? And who cares? Like really, like it doesn't matter. Like as long as you can, you know, just communicate your idea and get it across. But to bring it back to the director, like I think that's maybe sometimes they feel that, you know, like it's they've been planning and prepping and writing and whatever for so long and then they get their moment and it can be probably scary and intimidating to be out there and have to do all of that and communicate these things. And so I guess it's just trying to like remember that we all have your back, like we're all there for them. Like if it wasn't for the director bringing the project to life, like I wouldn't have a job. The camera system wouldn't have a job. So, you know, at the end of the day, like, I feel like you got to bring people on that know that and then not worry, you know, just be chill. And I, you know, I hope that answers your question a little bit because I feel like that can be a mistake where people are just a bit sort of nervous in a way. And that can be mistaken for being either grumpy, shut down, or overcompensate. I think that's a big thing. You know, when someone doesn't really, they might not be sure about something, they'll overcompensate. And then things can get jammed up and you just don't, you can't move things around as much because you're trying to second guess them. And and that type of thing. So I think that could be like a mistake. It's just to try and go in, cool, calm, collect, meditate beforehand, and just be like, we're going to do one shot at a time, one scene at a time, one day at a time. Mm-hmm. Don't try and think about the whole shoot as a whole. Like, I know you have to, because if you're making a whole movie, you have to think ahead. But when in the moment, just worry about the moment, you know, and then sort of go, okay, cool, that's going to lead to that now, and then worry about that moment. And I think that could be something that can help that I've noticed. And just again, like, you know, when you talk about watching films that don't feel cinematic, like, I don't know, there could be all sorts of reasons for that. Like, it might just be, you know, I mean, if they're working on a budget, it could just be a mistake of they're maybe just not into their taste or something, or
right,
you know, lower budget. Hard to get, like, production design is so important. You know, I can't give them enough credit for making cinematographers and everyone look good. Like, I could have all the lights and the best camera and lenses, and it could be an A-list actor, and you're just shooting in a room that's got white walls and it's bland, and it's not meant to be bland necessarily. Like, there's obviously sometimes you want it to be, but in this case, it could be something way better. And it wouldn't make a difference. I could be on a shitty little camera with whatever lens, and the room could be decorated and designed to perfection, and, you know, people will come away with it going, wow, the film looked good. So, you know, I gotta just be aware that everybody plays a massive part in it, you know. So
yeah,
that's another reason why I think things can look a little bit bland sometimes. They've cut corners on important things like locations. If you haven't got a budget, find amazing locations, like exteriors, just find places that already have something going on. And I've done a lot of music videos like that where we've barely had a production designer because it's so low budget and they weren't able to be brought on early enough. And so you have to, like, then that's when I think a lot more falls onto my shoulders with the look as well, when you have to be out and finding exteriors, especially exteriors, but even interiors on lower budgets where you can't, you know, repaint the room and bring in all these sorts of things. You have to sort of find architect, like, I think understanding structure and architecture and lines and just having a sense for what can look good in front of a camera can really help as well. So I think that's also a mistake people can make, and first time directors might want to cut corners to think, oh cool, we just shoot it in my living room, and then but their living room, it's their home and it might be nice to live in, but it like they haven't really decorated, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Just like even my space here, I like it, but I'm not, you know, is it going to lens up well in a feature? Probably not. I'm not going to recommend it. So,
yeah,
you know.
Cool. Well, I think that's a killer tip and a really good place to end. Charlie, this was awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me. I hope it helps. And
no, it was great. It was great. Thank you. All right. Here, as always, are some key takeaways from this conversation with Charlie Saroff. Number one, utilize misdirection. Scares often rely on the element of surprise. When crafting shots that elicit fear or tension, use decoys and misdirection to direct the audience's attention in one direction so you can surprise them from another. This is largely achieved through composition and lighting, and it relies on the principle that what the audience doesn't see is just as important as what they do see. By manipulating their expectations, you can create a more impactful scare and an overall sense of tension. For example, using dark corners or areas of the frame to hint at something lurking just out of sight can build suspense and heighten the eventual reveal. This, of course, partially relies on editing, but starts with what's on screen. Number two, plan, but be flexible. Charlie says that no matter how much you plan, at best 90% of it will go right, while the other 10% will be complete chaos. It's important to put yourself in a position to leverage that chaos. Thorough prep with shot lists and storyboards is crucial. However, it's equally important to remain open to spontaneous opportunities that arise on set. David Lynch advocates for being fully present on set to recognize and maximize visual opportunities that present themselves serendipitously. While planning ensures you have a roadmap and a backup plan, being flexible and present allows you to adapt to the changing dynamics of a scene, which can often lead to unexpectedly brilliant shots. Number three, test your gear and test your look. Testing is crucial to understand how different lenses and cameras perform under various conditions and to ensure consistency in your film's visual style.
Charlie conducts thorough camera and lens tests to determine the best equipment, and he experiments with different desired looks and uses the results to determine which gear to use before he makes his final selections. He'll even go so far as to test out how different paint colors read with different lenses and camera combinations. This thorough testing process ensures the film's visual consistency and quality. Anyway, guys, thanks as always for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, why not share it with your friends and family on social media? Don't forget to follow the show at Nick Taylor Horror Show. That's Nick Taylor Horror Show on TikTok and Instagram. Thanks again for listening to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. We scare because we care. Hey, guys, one last thing before you head off, and this is The Howl. How would you like a monthly newsletter featuring a recap of the latest horror news, my personal movie recommendations, updates from the show, and cool stuff I've recently discovered in the world of horror? If that sounds like something you'd enjoy, sign up for my monthly email newsletter, The Howl. You can join by visiting nicktaylor.com/thehowl today.